Good afternoon. Welcome to the Legislative Commission on Data Practices. Senator Limmer, did you bring popcorn to share with everybody?
No, it's all mine.
The first order of business would be to approve the minutes. And we think we do have a quorum now. The quorum for this commission now is four. So we do have a commission or a quorum now. So let's see. Senator Limmer, would you like to move those minutes of what's the date? December 6th.
Let me read them first. So moved, ma'am.
All right. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. We really only have a couple of agenda items today. We're going to be discussing some recommendations that this commission can make to the full legislature, and then we'll be taking public testimony. With that, what I'd like to do is have our staff, Ms. Bartle, go over a couple of the recommendations, and then I'll have nonpartisan staff. Well, they're both nonpartisan, but I'll we'll get it all explained here between our staff, I guess, all of the recommendations that we have. And what I'd like to do is just have an up or down or yes or no vote on these recommendations that will go to the full legislature. And that really is what's on the agenda today. And so with that, what I would like to do is take up the license plate reader issue first. And so we'll turn that over to our commission staff, Ms. Bartle, to explain why we're doing what we're doing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the automated license plate reader statute is covered under 13.824, which became effective August 1st, 2015, meaning we were starting to receive license plate reader audits under subdivision 6 this fall, or this past fall in 2017. There was a great deal of inconsistencies in the quality and quantity and content of those audits. So it came to our attention that perhaps areas of that needed to be clarified in order to receive more consistent audits. One of the first notes to clarify would be defining independent. We had received audits that were supposed to be completed by third-party companies, or that was the intent, and we were receiving audits from other government agencies within the same county. And so I don't believe that that was the goal of independent, and so we would need to adjust and clarify that language defining independent. Second, we would like to clarify the deadlines for completing the biennial audit. It came to my attention through several audit companies and police departments that it wasn't clear to them when they should be completing their audit. So we would like to have a firm deadline set on that rather than a rolling deadline. Originally, the way that the statute was being read was that based on the date that the license plate readers were used or purchased, that then within 2 years of that date, they were supposed to be submitting an audit. We were getting audits on all sorts of different dates depending on each department's use of their license plate reader. So we would like to set a firm deadline, for example, August 1st, 2019, just to clarify and simplify for law enforcement departments when their audit should be completed. Third, we would like to clarify what's included in an audit report. Specifically, including some more information under the relevant, or including information under the log of use requirement under subdivision 5. This is meant to clarify the content and the quality of the reports. We were receiving some reports that were only one page in length, and other audit reports that were 6 to 8 pages in length. Ideally, I think it's the commission's goal to receive a more thorough audit. And that would include things like the date and time the license plate reader data was collected, the number of license plate readers in possession, the number of license plate readers in use, brands of license plate readers, whether the license plate reader is mobile or stationary, and how often license plate readers' data is being collected. In addition to that, the number of vehicles or license plates identified as stolen, the number of vehicles or license plates identified that a warrant was out for the arrest of the owner of the vehicle, the number of vehicles or license plates identified as having an owner with a suspended or revoked license, and the number of vehicles or license plates identified as active investigation data. The purpose of that being we would like to see how often the license plate readers are actually obtaining data that is pertinent to investigations and making the license plate readers worthwhile.
Did you Representative Schultz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question. If you want to look at a percentage, are we also going to collect information on the total number of licenses read so we can look at the percentage?
Are you asking me or are you asking staff?
Staff.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Schultz, yes, that's another requirement I will get to. Basically, I believe addressing what you were asking is that we wanted to collect the aggregate number of vehicles or license plates collected and then the number of vehicles or license plates retained after 60 days as active investigation data. Does that answer your question, Representative Schultz?
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Ms. Bartles, were you finished? Were you... You got some more to go, right?
Yes. A few more things.
Yep.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Additionally, to clarify, the requirements of the audit would include how data is being classified, how long the data is being retained for, how it's being destroyed, what system is used for destroying the data. And then moving on just from the audit requirements would be clarifying and removing language under 13.824 paragraph C, where the audit report is referred to as a summary report. We would like to replace that language with the detail or similar language so that the audit, it's clear that the audit isn't meant to be a summary as in a one-page document, but that it's meant really to be more of a full report detailing everything I just outlined. Lastly, just a couple clarifications under subdivision 8 would be to clarify that a law enforcement agency should be notifying the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension when it has begun using an ALPR or when it has begun possessing an ALPR, and then adding the requirement that the BCA must publish the date each agency gave notice to the BCA. And that is everything for the clarifications under 13.824.
Thank you very much. Are there questions on these particular recommendations from members? All right, seeing none. Mr. Hopkins, if you could go over the other two, the tracking warrants and the personnel data pieces. Representative Lesch got called into court today. He carried these bills last year, and they needed some tweaking. And so I think we've come up with some language. But I'll have Mr. Hopkins from Nonpartisan House Research address those two recommendations, please.
Madam Chair and members, the first set of recommendations from the Commission relate to Minnesota Statute Section 626A.42, Subdivision 4, which deals with location tracking warrants. These are warrants which under law are for location information for electronic devices specifically, so cell phone tracking, for example. There was some confusion about what exactly these warrants are for, and there was some ambiguity that caused them to be confused with other kinds of warrants. So what the Commission is recommending are two amendments that have been proposed in House File 2309. The first is to amend Section 626A.08, Subdivision 2. This section of law concerns the sealing and disclosure of a warrant for wire, electronic, or oral communications. This has been in law for a long time, since the 1980s. It doesn't deal with the kind of tracking warrants that are the subject in 626.42, but there is some concern about those kinds of warrants under 626A.08 being confused with the location tracking warrants under 626A.42. So the first recommendation is to clearly distinguish the procedures from location tracking warrants from these warrants for wire, electronic, or oral communications. The second is a similar amendment. This is to 626A.37, Subdivision 4, which concerns the sealing of a warrant for a mobile tracking device. Again, this is a section of law addressing a technology that existed in the 1980s prior to the kinds of location tracking technology that's meant to be addressed by location tracking warrants. So the recommendation there is to amend 626A.37 subdivision 4 to again distinguish the procedures for location tracking warrants as opposed to these warrants for mobile tracking devices.
Great, thank you. And then the personnel data?
Madam Chair and members, the third set of recommendations from the Commission are for section 13.43. This deals with personnel data under the Minnesota Data Practices Act. It relates to the KSTP-TV v. Metropolitan Council case in which there was a recording from a Metro Transit bus video. Metro Transit had saved the recording from the bus in the personnel file of the bus driver and therefore argued that it was private personnel data under section 13.43. Section 13.43 essentially reverses the default rule in the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act, which is that government data is by default public data unless it's classified otherwise. Personnel data under section 13.43 is private data on individuals unless it's specifically made public. So what the Commission is recommending is the amendment proposed in House File 1316. What House File 1316 does is add a paragraph to section 13.43 subdivision 2, and this is the subdivision that lists all the kinds of personnel data that are public rather than private. So File 1316 essentially adds a paragraph to Subdivision 2, which classifies as public data a recording of government personnel, unless the recording is specifically classified as not public under some existing section, other existing section of law.
Right. So hopefully that's clearer than mud to many of you. Representative Schultz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what is the definition of recording and who's doing the recording? Is it official recording from an official committee hearing, or is it someone's recording on a cell phone?
Mr. Hopkins?
Madam Chair, Representative Schultz, recording is not defined in the bill.
Okay. So I think I would like the committee to maybe think about how we define who's doing the recording and what's public versus okay. What's private.
Okay. Is Mr. Hopkins, if you know, is recording, is it defined anywhere in statute where it might relate to this so we don't have to come up with something from scratch, or is this something we're going to have to come up with?
Madam Chair, I'm not aware of any place in statute that has that exact term defined, but I'd be happy to look into that.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Other member questions on any of these recommendations? And I just want to make it clear, too, that these recommendations will be going to Senator Limmer's committee and my committee, so we'll be sending recommendations to ourselves. But we're not limited by those. There may be obviously other topics that we take up, or we may decide that there's still some issues with these. But right now, I believe that staff is coming up with language where none exists, and for these topics. So I wanted to get that on the record as well. Are there any comments from members? Okay. Let's go ahead and take a vote. Does the public testimony concern these recommendations? Okay. We'll go ahead and go to public testimony then we'll take a vote afterwards. All right, so the first person I have on my list is Mr. Ealing, Matt Ealing from Minkoji. And on deck would be Sheila Van Pelt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, senators. Matt Ealing, Minnesota Coalition on Government Information. We'd like to, first of all, thank the Commission for the attention it's paid over the last several months to important data policy matters, including the critical matter of preserving public access to government information. That access really is essential to the functioning of representative democracy, where the people form the foundation of their own governance. And it's always been the case that those who control the flow of information control the outcomes of all other public policy matters. And so that's why it's so essential to have a robust framework for open government in law. The value of this commission lies in its ability to investigate data policy in a thorough way and to carry that information back to the members and colleagues of the legislature. This session, legislators will be asked to evaluate a number of data access policies and other data policies, and they will look to this commission for guidance, and they'll also reference these proceedings, I'm sure, for background information. And because of that, we want to enter into the record a few of the guidelines that we look to in the formation of government transparency policy. First, we'd note that access to public information is really a matter that requires constant monitoring. The state's history of open records started 4 decades ago, and our history of open meetings goes back even farther. And we feel it's important to understand that this is not set in stone. This is not an unchangeable feature of law, but rather it's frequently subject to efforts to limit, to reduce, or to avoid transparency and disclosure requirements. I'd note that many government entities in this state do take their open records requirements seriously, and we appreciate that, but we also routinely see examples of those that try to evade those same requirements. For instance, last year, the state of Minnesota submitted an economic development bid for Amazon's second corporate headquarters. That bid should be open for public inspection, since it contains pledges of assets and monies that are underwritten by public tax dollars. However, the state claims that it does not hold the full bid, and thus it cannot release it, since it's outsourced work on the bid to a third-party nonprofit organization. That nonprofit organization, meanwhile, states that it will not release the bid due to a non-disclosure agreement it has signed with Amazon. At the same time, efforts to restrict public access frequently circulate here at the legislature, either as concepts or as formal bills. Last session, for instance, the state's Bureau of Mediation Services drafted a proposal that would have expanded the ability of the Commissioner of Mediation to close a wide variety of public meetings of government bodies, and thus broadly expand the Commissioner's existing limited authority. So secondly, we would urge that when bills are brought into the legislative session that would result in closures of public data, we urge that those be given careful scrutiny, because reducing government transparency is really a zero-sum game. There's only so much public access to be traded away before it's gone. We also think it's important to understand that when most bills to close off public access are brought forward, they're not phrased as such. They're phrased as benefits for one or another constituency, or as pragmatic steps that need to be taken to expedite public business. Thirdly and finally, we always stress that government transparency rises above political and partisan considerations, since it's foundational to good governance for all. When the public loses insight into how its government functions, that loss does not fall solely on one party or one constituency, but upon the whole of the people. And throughout our state's decades of government transparency policy, those who have championed this issue have always come from both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats alike. And their dedication has formed and upholds the legal infrastructure that we have today for government transparency in this state. So, members of the commission, we thank you again for your attention to these matters, and thank you for giving us time to enter these comments into the record. And I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Are there any member questions for this testifier? Mr. Ealing, I'd just like to commend you on the work that you did on revealing the Amazon request for, or the proposal to get Amazon to come here. It was a good piece of journalism, and we really appreciate the work that you did on that to make that known to the public that there are some issues. And I know Senator Limmer and I are both aware of that current status of them not making that public, and it's troubling to us. And so we'll be having discussions going forward on what maybe we can do about that. So with that said, and one last time, Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So with what you said, I appreciate it. And I think especially in these times, we need to make sure we're doing more to make everything we do more transparent in the government. And I think it's unfortunate that we're in a room that we can't stream our committee hearing. And so I hope in the future, when there's other rooms available, we can have a room where we can stream so the public can watch what we're doing.
Thank you, Mr. Ealing.
Thank you very much.
My understanding, Representative Schultz, is that the folks that are in charge of the House streaming public information, they were streaming something else at this time, right? Okay. Yep. So, but I think room 10, you can stream from here, so. Yes, I think it's at the basement hearing room that you cannot. You can, I think you can get audio, but you can't get video in the basement hearing room. The next testifier I have is Ms. Van Pelt. Is she still here? There she is. And then on deck is Mark Hughes and then Keith Carlson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sheila Van Pelt, and I'm pleased to be here to testify before you. And I'll try and make my remarks brief, but if I could echo exactly what Mr. Ealing said, it would be exactly that. I think overall, we need to recognize the importance of the transparency and accountability that is due to citizens who want to be involved in their government. And, you know, again, it makes for good policy. My experience have been, so where there's more an overview, I'm take you right down a little bit into the lower level of doing work. In wanting to secure information from the government, again, many entities may do very well, but I have run across too many obstacles that shows and verifies that the government is there to be responsive to us in our data practices requests. It's been more of the norm than the than otherwise. Subject data practices requests, if I may say, the Department of Health has been extremely difficult, and it has been confirmed by Mr. Noble's office via Judy Randall, and with Mr. Noble's being aware of it, that they have confirmed that they will do an investigation into the Minnesota Department of Health per the data practices requests. Whether that is done sooner than later, it's been on the docket for a while, you know, to be seen, but it is a pattern of behavior that is unacceptable. Currently, even too, I've dealt with another area where the data practice requests for data subject data have been, you know, again, statutes and laws broken clearly beyond the time frame that any of us should expect when you should be getting it within 10 business days, if not immediately. So other data requests, same thing. So now if I may just jump back up to legislation that's been put forth that I think is extremely important is our retention schedule. I'm seeing data discarded, and I sometimes wonder if we're really getting what we're asking for, because I've come to find it comes to be more subjective searches than all-encompassing and giving you everything you have. And so I just want to throw caution to that, to be aware that that happens. Please keep pushing on that legislation, because in that way we know the government is accountable to us and they remember who they work for, and that we can take a view in and see what's going on for ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this testifier? Thank you, Ms. Van Pelt. Mark Hughes.
Hi there.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Here we go. Chair Stat, members of the committee, I'm going to be brief as well, but I...
Would you introduce yourself first?
Oh, Mark Hughes, and I'm just a lobbying guy that hangs around here most of the time. And I just want to make a few brief comments. Yeah, it is a citizen's government. Without the citizens, those that are voted into office probably wouldn't get in. Let me take you back to brief history. Sheila Van Pelt attended the governor's reception with me. We got invited in there, so we went. And so we told the governor briefly what was going on with their matter. And the governor called Joanna Dornfeld over and said, Joanna, you know, see these people and take care of that. So that started this chain of events. Then we went to Lauren Gilchrist and asked a few questions. We were promised by a certain date that we'd have answers. We didn't hear back. So the records were, gets destroyed within the office. The Department of Health, we went to... Ellinger, and we didn't get any help there. And it's just my firm belief that when we vote somebody in office, whoever our representative is, no matter where we live, should be able to get help or get us to the right channel to get help. I mean, this has been going on for five, almost 6 years. And government is slow, but it's not that slow. So whatever the blockade is, we got to simplify this process and simplify it now. And I can't believe this went on. And she's a businesswoman and a citizen that took her time to come down here to do what she thought was right. And thank goodness she got a lot of good coverage from the Star Tribune, because at the end of the year, last year, that's what really brought this out. And just now, I feel in my years or months around here, we're starting to see a little bit of progress. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Are there any questions for this testifier? Seeing none, thank you for, oh, Senator Warren, or Limmer.
Mr. Hughes, I'm trying to recall the circumstances around this request that was made directly to the governor and some of his commissioners. Is this the case where there's a desire by a family to determine the cause of death of a particular citizen that was under the care of a medical entity of some sort, a nursing home?
Yes, it was Sheila Van Pelt's mother, as I remember it, and she was under the care of a nursing home, and that's what really rectified and started all this. And Sheila had power of attorney and wanted to get the right documentation and records, and we went through all these hoops and all this politics that we wouldn't have had to. I mean, this has gone on way too long. We need to simplify this process if it is the citizen or power of attorney choosing to get these records that's needed for whatever purpose.
So, Senator Madam Miller. Chair, so I'm to understand that this was a private discussion that you made reference to at the governor's reception when he was reelected shortly after he took the oath of office. He directed at that very time in front of you a commissioner to find that information and give it to Sheila Van Pelt.
Right. Senator Limmer, he was directing Joanna Dornfeld to help us get to our goal and get the, you know, get the pertinent information. That has never happened. We went to Lauren Gilchrist. We asked a bunch of questions. Matter of fact, the governor wasn't there, so we had it in the actual makeshift office, the meeting, on November 11th. And we asked a bunch of questions. Oh, yeah, we'll be back to you in 10 days or 2 weeks. That never happened. We went to Ellinger, the head of DHS, and he was really reluctant to talk to anybody. I mean, he was, he must have done a good job, but he's hard to communicate with, I'll tell you that. And I just don't know. I'm really, in all the years I've tried to put in here, I'm really disappointed in this end result. These requests should have, if this is what a citizen wants, this request should have been adhered to and followed, and it just wasn't. You know, everybody was making up excuses and couldn't, this person couldn't see that person, and this person will get back to this person. You don't hear anything.
Senator Limmer?
Madam Chair, the way I understand it, if we understand the timetable, we're now going on 3 years waiting for the order of a governor to their commissioner to fulfill the direction that the governor gave to one of their commissioners. And sometimes we talk in kind of generalities. Mr. Hughes, you came here and you were talking, you didn't put a name or a person to the description. I wanted to make sure that there's a public record after 3 years that this involves a real person, a citizen who is now dead, and there has been no further investigation at the request of the family to determine the circumstances of that death. Am I correct in characterizing this correct?
Correct, you are.
All right. That's all I needed to know. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hughes.
Thank you.
Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members, Keith Carlson, Minnesota Intercounty Association. Thank you for accommodating my last-minute request to testify. I received the recommendations this morning where I was at a meeting with Dakota County out in Hastings and have had relatively little time to prepare for it, so I appreciate the accommodation. I do want to congratulate the commission for the time that they've taken to thoroughly examine the data practices issues that have come up recently, but do want to comment on the issue number three relating to the classification of recordings of government personnel. As I believe the commission knows, this was the subject of a bill introduced by Representative Lesh, Senate House File 1316. And to Representative Lesh's credit, he brought together all interested parties on this subject that, you know, quite clearly has identified in the memo from your staff was created between the conflict of the general presumption that all data in the hands of governments are public data and the provisions of 1343, the classification for certain personnel data that until there's final disposition of disciplinary proceedings, that data relating to that is private. We certainly appreciate the concerns that were generated by the KSTP situation relating to an altercation that occurred on a Metro Transit bus. But we are concerned with the current recommendation as to its breadth that goes, frankly, beyond what we believe is necessary to address that specific situation. We're concerned because of its impacts on our employees, and frankly, because of its impacts on our security situations, because most of our video recordings would occur in security instances, but there are other instances as well that could be affected by this. Again, as I indicated, Representative Lesh brought together both proponents of this legislation as well as the representatives of both the employees and the employers. And the results of that meeting was that ultimately there was not common agreement on what was to be done, frankly due to concerns that some of the employee representatives have. And I'll leave it to them to better enunciate what those concerns are. The employer group did effectively agree to more limited language that is identified at the top of the document that I handed out that would be in lieu of the current new Clause 9 in 1316 that would provide that if the video is the result of recordings that occur in a location where there's no reasonable expectation of privacy, thus a lobby, a meeting room for the public, a waiting room for the public, that video would be public, as is anticipated, and would clearly cover the MTC bus situation that was the subject of the KSTP lawsuit. But in other instances where the recordings have been made in an area such as an employee workstation, possibly a classroom, possibly in employee-only meetings, it would not apply. Again, as I indicated at the meeting that Senator Representative Lesh facilitated, there wasn't total agreement on this, so I don't want to represent this as being agreed to by all parties. But at least from the employer point of view, at least at the time we were discussing House File 1316, we indicated in common that we could get along with this language, but I would have to indicate we'd have resistance to going beyond its has recommendation number three does. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So wouldn't it be a burden if we did not modify this language and said that we were going to make public a recording of government personnel? Would that not be a burden to the state?
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, representatives, I mean, data practices is a burden that we have to take on as servants of the public, so we do have to retain data and make it available when it is classified as public. This is an additional burden, and I think in prior testimony by others before this committee, video is a particularly vexing situation, both because of the quantity it takes to retain it, but also because of kind of the incidental things that may be off to the side, where an individual who is covered by the statute may have his or her identity identified, and consequently it's particularly vexing for us to go through such video when it's requested and edit out particularly private individuals whose data is classified as private. The legislature has already addressed this issue with regards to the body cam video. And basically allowed it to retain its private classification unless the victim, for example, somebody who's been the victim of a domestic assault where the police are responding, to decide whether he or she wants to make that public. But again, the same issues that are raised in that situation, and that's covered explicitly under the current law, we have that, frankly, similar issues with all video.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was thinking of a burden in the sense that if it's on somebody's private device, but it's a government official, how would the state go about making that public if we have a recording of a government official or personnel and it's on my cell phone?
Madam Chair, I would defer to your staff, but in my understanding would be a video made by a private individual, regardless of where, is his or her property, and they can choose to disclose it as they want. But again, I defer to staff, even though it may be in a government venue.
Yeah, that wouldn't even be considered government data.
Madam Chair, would it be considered if it was entered as a personnel issue on the HR side?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think it's pretty nuanced there. If it's introduced into evidence in a disciplinary proceedings, that data in the hand of the government employer under current law would be private until such time that there's disposition of the ultimate disciplinary issue that was raised there. Still, I would believe that in the hands of the private individual who introduced it, they're free to do with it as they want. But again, I defer to staff if they would disagree with me.
Mr. Hopkins, do you have anything to add there?
Madam Chair, members, yeah, I believe that's correct. If a government entity has possession of a recording, it would be government data, even if the recording originated from an individual's personal cell phone. The classification of that government data, whether it's private or public, would depend on the status of a disciplinary investigation under Section 13.43.
Representative Schultz, follow up? You're good? Okay. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I may, just for the purposes of making sure I understand what we're doing, what the intent here, we have these three different topics. Are we going to be voting on these as individual questions?
We can.
Okay. And then I know the language, since Mr. Carlson has brought up this particular question on the third topic, the recommendation point number one under this one, we have that language as a recommendation. My concern is the sense of this body, you know, when it comes out of here with whatever the vote result ends up being. Are we weighing in on specific language as would be HF 1316, or are we doing this in a general sort of way that we support this in principle, but we're not weighing in on particular language? And obviously, Mr. Carlson has brought up some interesting points regarding alternative language that has been discussed for this particular bill. What is your sense of all of this?
Well, we can vote on each section separately if that's the desire of the commission. We don't have, as you can see, we don't have exact language accompanying this, so that is still yet to be determined. I know staff has been working on some language, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Mr. Hopkins? Have you guys been working on language for these recommendations?
So, Madam Chair, for the second set of recommendations for automated license plate readers, those are not specifically addressed in any bill currently, so there's no language drafted yet for that second set of recommendations. For the first and the third set of recommendations, there are references in there to specific bills that have specific language in them. So for the personnel data one, it's references House File 1316.
Okay, so is that in this summary, that House File 13?
The summary, Madam Chair, the summary doesn't contain the verbatim language, but the summary does say that the commission recommends the amendment proposed in House File 13.
It does. Okay. Okay. I think what we should do is probably just vote on each of these items as they stand right now, and knowing that in the legislative process, amendments can be made, language can be tweaked. So I think that's what we'll do going forward. And Representative Lesh, I'm sure, will continue to, or whoever carries these bills, will continue to work with the interested parties to come to a good place where folks can hopefully agree on the language ultimately.
I'm sure.
Senator Limmer.
I'm sure. Can I make a comment?
Certainly.
Under these recommendations, our recommendation, if it was passed, does not restrict any policy committee to that language specifically. And I always thought that it would be more of a broader recommendation than an exact one, simply because we have to recognize the jurisdiction of committees. And so whatever is done today, we would still have to go through the consideration by a chair to put it onto their agenda, and then once having a hearing, then it would go through the rigor of a committee hearing, and then it's subject to change anyway.
Senator Kent?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Limmer. My response to this would be that I appreciate that sentiment and that potential in that process. But what we've seen in the past is that when this body has come out with a recommendation, it gets wielded with an awful lot of strength when it goes into committee and when it goes onto the floor. Certainly in the Senate, I know it did with the license plate reader a few years ago. I say that as the one person who was the dissenting vote on that one. And I had to keep reminding people that it was not, in fact, unanimous. And in this discussion where we are talking about, on this particular topic, the commission recommends the amendment proposed, that means we are voting to approve the language that is in that particular bill. And so I just think we need to be careful, because this body was created for a reason, to provide that sort of background and advisory support to our colleagues. And I just think we need to take care that when we put our stamp of approval on something, it really does carry pretty significant weight. So I just offer that for consideration.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Senator Kent, I know for a fact, being a member of this commission, there was a particular chair in the Senate who didn't bother to entertain any of our recommendations. So I'm not quite sure if your interpretation of how much weight this commission has and carries is universal. And like I say, we're still recognizing the power of a legislative chairman of a policy committee. And we can make a recommendation, and it's up to them whether or not they want to move forward on it or not. Or some of these recommendations or a modification of them might end up as a floor amendment from time to time. We know how all the different ways one can travel a bill or an amendment into the enactment of a law. There's a lot of different ways how to get from point A to point B. So I'm, I guess I have a more varied history of the recommendations from this commission. It would be nice that anything we decide corporately here would have a tremendous amount of weight in the legislature, but I know that just simply doesn't happen as often as I would like to see it. But if I was a chairman of a committee and not a member of the commission, then I'd probably think the opposite. So I just think we try to do our best. We try to focus on these things during the interim and give a signal to the policy committees. This is an area we've looked at. We think you should too. And here's some suggested language, but ultimately you have to make the direction as a committee policy chair.
I might also add that this commission recommended on non-hit license plates that the retention period would be zero, and we ended up with 60 days. So I don't think that it's beyond the realm of possibility that what we have here is not going to end up being the final product. So with that, I would like to go ahead and move forward with just a piece, section by section vote on these recommendations. So with that, all those in favor of approval of the recommendation, the first one there related to the disclosure of location tracking warrants, all those in favor of this recommendation, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. That section is adopted. On the section for automated license plate readers, all those in favor of these recommendations, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Recommendation is adopted. On the third recommendation, additions to personnel data classified as public, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Aye.
The motion is adopted. With that, folks, thank you, members. I'm not sure we're going to have maybe one more commission meeting before session. We haven't determined that yet. I also wanted to just say a big thank you to Ms. Bartles, who is our new kid on the block here, and she has really dove right in, especially with these ALPR. And I think it's sometimes she's probably eating, sleeping, and drinking all these different audits that have come across her desk and across her computer screen. And she's just done a really great job creating spreadsheets to make it more understandable, hopefully. And so I really, I think that since that's, you know, this was a piece of legislation that a few years ago was a pretty new way of looking at some of law enforcement's technologies. And so even we had the discussion at that time that there'd probably be tweaks that would be forthcoming. And so I don't think these are anything that are earth-shattering, just trying to make things a little bit clearer in the audit, in the audits that come to us as legislators, so that we can understand what these devices are really doing and the benefits to law enforcement and to the general public. So let me see if there's anything else on my... Oh, Representative Lucero, if you notice, members, one of the things we didn't do a recommendation on was the student data privacy bill that Representative Lucero is carrying. And Representative Kent, or Senator Kent, sorry. And so I know that Representative Lucero, you've done some work on that, and it's... Could you give us an update on that? Because I do think that is something that we would like to see happen this year in the legislature.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity just to briefly speak to it. It is a very important topic, and I would emphasize that, again, it's not a partisan topic. And the last time we had the topic of student data privacy in front of this commission, we received very good feedback from multiple stakeholders, very valuable feedback that we are working to incorporate. In addition, we received feedback from staff to take the bill as it was previously written in the education statute or chapter, and it was rewritten per the recommendation into the data practices chapter. And so that has happened, and there's a lot, as one can imagine, there's a lot of translation from one area of law to another area of law that is occurring. So the first two stages of that translation has happened, and at the same time we're incorporating the first round of feedback that we received from the stakeholders. And that, so that is still a work in progress. It was not able to be completed in time for today's meeting, which is the reason why we didn't want to necessarily put it on as a recommendation, because it's still a work in progress. Right. But I understand that this commission, and I'm very thankful for it, is in favor of the topic in general. Updating our law in Minnesota here to better represent and put controls in place to protect student data privacy, which is an effort that we'll be doing. So the bill we expect will have the next iteration in time for our start of session on February 20th. I'm not sure if we're going to have the ability or enough time to get a second round of feedback from stakeholders, but we're pushing to do that. Okay. So,
right. Thank you for that update, and thank you to yourself, the stakeholders, and to our staff who've been working on that. I know taking that original bill and fitting it into Chapter 13 was not an easy task, so I appreciate the efforts on behalf of our staff, especially this one who's operating on less sleep because his child is still getting up at night. So it's his new baby. So, and we're glad to have you back, by the way, Nathan. With that, members, unless there's anyone else in the audience wishing to testify, Mr. Heller. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. And Legislative Court Commission, my name is Rick Heller. I unofficially represent the twice exceptional people with print disabilities. I've been coming to a few of these meetings, I always like to connect dots and make sense to all these documents that are online as relates to recommendations. I know this is not a sonar hearing, which gives people feedback, but I think it would be helpful when people give input that you identify the, how that impacted perhaps what your recommendations are. I think that's a connected part of this process. And then as well as the very beginning of this process with last year, there was a priority list that was created. There was no connection made at this meeting regarding how that fits into the priority list. So I think that would be another part to this process. Now, I know it's a value to this group that transparency is an important part, but if it's not fully searchable, is it transparent? For instance, just for the record, I've asked numerous times about documents being fully accessible. The proposal for recommendations today was put out there ahead of time, and I appreciate the LCC of doing their great work to make that and making sure that's fully accessible. However, there are documents that are currently online, and I know Greg is here. If he wanted to come up and yield to a question, with your permission, obviously, and I'll move on. However, as documents are provided, for instance, on Wednesday, December 6th, minute presentation, hyphen, Security Minnesota, and then a plan to fill. So, like, that document isn't even fully accessible, and that comes from minute. And because the legislature does not have an accessibility policy, however, one of the documents I provided on House File 1541 and 2120, one being Thiessen and one being Bach, that moves the bar of what electronic means at the Minnesota legislature as it relates to transparency. It needs to be timely as well. I can't stress it enough. If we want to really, truly talk about accessibility and transparency and connect with the public at large, I think it needs to start here. Not just for state agencies or perpetrator or the blind, for instance, are quasi. They're school districts. They're required to follow that, but not other school districts. So the piece of this is, as we move ahead in the future regarding selection, acquisition, and use, and that's your audience, and how you provide that in that way, that you can connect with them and get more creativity as we look for solutions and rewriting laws, including the word, what the word electronic means. It's not a static read anymore. It's dynamic. We mean to provide fairness and sameness. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this testifier? Thank you, Mr. Heller. With that, we are adjourned.